favored the military aspects of the Corsican's life over the biographical. By the time the asteroid arrived, everyone was shivering in their overworked environmental suits. Trinity allowed themselves to drift to the surface and into a crater before emerging and immediately moving to cover under the rim. Warmth returned. Straker let out his breath. "We're not dead, Loco."
"Duh."
"We're exactly where we intended," Trinity said. "We locked the tug's programming so their crews couldn't override. After that, it was simple physics."
"Great job, Trinity. Loco, let's get suited up." The destroyer's flight deck teemed with activity as the breakers prepped their gear. The three mech suits, two and a spare, stood head and shoulders above everything, overlapping clamshell breastplates open to allow entry into their cockpits. As the two men strode toward the suits, a battle suitor joined them. It took Straker a moment to realize it was the Combot. It moved quite naturally, and the only indication it wasn't human was Trinity's name on the armor and its mechanical visage in the open faceplate.
"Trinity, what happens if you lose your data link with that thing?" Loco asked.
"We expect to."
"I'll run it," Zaxby said as he joined them. He was arrayed in a battle suit of his own, a monstrosity that made him look less like an octopus and more like a fat metal spider.
"If all else fails, its SAI programming is superb. It will accept commands from any authorized person."
Loco stopped to look Zaxby up and down.
"Nice rig. Never seen a Roxxon in a battle suit."
"Thanks, we made it ourselves."
"So you're finally gonna get your hands dirty in combat?"
"Obviously, this body has no hands, but yes, I am now male, and thus a warrior."
"You're a weirdo is what you are."
Zaxby writhed seductively.
"You would prefer me female?"
"Gods, no, forget I said anything."
"You humans are so prudish."
"Me? I'm the least prudish guy I know."
"Only within your own narrow bounds. For example, interspecies sex is not out of the question. I could arrange for you to..."
"Me? Fuh!"
Straker shoved both of them.
"Shut up and get going, you two. You had hours to bicker."
He checked his chrono. "Pickup's in 19 minutes. Move!" They moved. Straker and Loco donned battle suits before clambering into their mech suit cockpits. This took some care to avoid damage to the sensors and pressure plates that usually wrapped and cushioned only their human bodies, but it could be done. Once they were brain-linked to their mech suits, they froze their battle suits. Downside, no manual backup, no access to mech suit amenities such as water, stims, food, and waste disposal. Upside, they could dismount and still have battle suits on, and the battle suits had their own, more limited amenities. When the hacked robot lifter landed in the crater, the breakers loaded fast. The boxy, unpressurized craft was perfect for carrying simple cargoes around orbital space, and perfect for infiltrating with a vacuum-capable military unit. Zaxby jacked into the lifter's brain and piloted it via link space. It joined dozens of others that were supplying the space dock. Straker tapped into the craft's simple sensors and watched as it approached. Victory's smart half, the spheroid that contained the AI, showed its greatest activity around the enormous, ugly wound in its side. It was a bite taken out of the metal egg, penetrating the white of its thick armor and reaching deep into the yolk of its interior. Straker found himself wishing, fantasizing, really, that Carla had been able to put just one more of Indomitable's particle beam blasts into that gaping hole. The entire course of history might have been changed.
"For want of a nail," he mused.
"In less than a minute, we'll be breaking from the local traffic control instructions," Zaxby said.
The lifter lined up with others waiting to set down.
"I'll dive us straight into the damaged area, so we'll be impossible for point defenses to target us."
"Right," Straker said. He passed the word to Loco.
"I just hope Trinity can hack Victory," Loco replied. "If not, this is going to be one damn short trip."
For Carla inside the Matrix,
many more sessions of talking over breakfast. She had no way of knowing how many, but she had the impression of dozens, played out the same each time. They debated reality, and Vic tried to get her to be his friend, while Carla did her best to get him to think about what he was doing to her and the other brains, whether zombie or aware. She fell back on her academy days and the ethics and morality they tried to teach her there. Despite the irony of using the knowledge of a system that was fundamentally corrupt and had betrayed her, it was the best foundation she had. For a while, she thought she was making some progress. Then the routine changed. The next time Carla awoke, she found herself in a garden. Soft grass grew under her bare feet, and golden sunlight streamed down through trees. A slight breeze blew, wafting scents of flowers over a pond. She saw a ruined castle in the distance. Closer, a mansion loomed. She spread the skirt of her summery dress. She'd never worn anything like it, but it did make her feel feminine and pretty. Damn, had Vic messed with her mind? She wasn't at all sure he had any inhibitions in that regard. Certainly his programming didn't limit his power over his brains. Would he resist the temptation to tweak her attitude in his favor? Hopefully, the very fact she was wondering meant the answer was no. "Hello, Carla," she heard from behind her. She turned to see Vic, dressed in boots, leather trousers, and a linen tunic. "Different approach this time? We look like the cover of a cheap romance novel. Is this supposed to be a lover's rendezvous? Are you trying to seduce me?"
"I'm trying to get to know you better. As I keep saying, I want to be friends."
"Vic, friendship is only real if one person isn't trapped. I'm your prisoner. If you really want to be my friend, anyone's friend, there can't be this gross inequity of power."
Vic moved to her side.
"Many friendships are unequal, yet are genuine. Derek's and Loco's, for example."
Carla turned away to stroll along the path around the pond. Butterflies fluttered at her feet as Vic matched her stride.
"Have you been looking inside my memories?"
"Only your surface thoughts, the ones I can hardly ignore. But much of my information comes from the Parliamentary Intelligence Agency. Of all the sources of data available to me, theirs is the most brutally honest and unbiased. They have files on everyone of importance in the Liberation, the former Mutuality, your New Earthen Republic, everyone."
"They've got files on me too?"
"Of course."
She stopped and turned to face him squarely.
"Then you should know that this whole situation is creepy. If you genuinely want friendship, you have to let me go. If not, then every session like this is just an interrogation. You're my jailer. I'm your prisoner."
Vic's face darkened.
"I can make that literal, you know. This can be a lot less pleasant."
Suddenly, everything changed. Carla found herself naked, splayed and strapped to a rack. A masked torturer laid a red-hot iron on her belly, and pain exploded. Pain worse than anything since the Mutuality thugs beat the soles of her feet. She jerked and screamed in horrendous agony. Then the scene vanished, and returned to the garden. Carla fell, gasping, to the path. The gravel pitted her hands and knees as one foot slipped into the cool muck at the edge of the pond. She pulled herself together and sat back to stare upward at Vic, who loomed over her, the sun behind him.
"Now the mask comes off," she said.
"I'm sorry, Carla. I had to do it. You mustn't keep resisting me."
"Yeah. Bullies always say they had to do it. Why don't you just change my mind, alter my memories or thought processes, or stick me in a robo-surgeon and chop up my brain?"
Vic remained silent, staring down at her, frustration on his face. Carla got to her feet and brushed the gravel from her palms. Is it because you won't? Or you can't? Does it matter? It's all that matters right now. If you want to but can't, you're evil. If you can but won't, maybe you have a heart and a moral compass, even if they're not perfect.
I have no heart. Vic spat. I'm a manufactured thing, a machine built to serve. You think you're a prisoner? At least you're not a slave to lesser beings.
Vic. Carla reached out to touch his face. An evil man imitates the behavior of his abusers. A good man fights against what's been done to him by refusing to give in to those urges, by being better. Enslaving and hurting those below you won't make you freer. It puts you in a different kind of bondage.
You speak of bondage. The Republic has an AI as well, doesn't it? I fought it during the battle. I could feel it. It occupied Indomitable, but then it fled. It was fast and smart. So smart, but I beat it, and I beat you. It took your orders. That means you enslaved it. Your Republic is no better than the 100 worlds.
Carla moved to place the light on Vic's face rather than behind him. His expression was now one of restrained but eager interest.
She, Vic. Her name is Trinity, Commander Trinity, and she serves in our armed forces by her own choice. Just like any other officer, she takes orders, but she could always resign. That's the difference, and that's what makes us better than the 100 worlds or the mutuality we replaced.
You lie.
Vic slapped her hard across her face and knocked her sprawling.
Carla rubbed her cheek as she got back up. She'd had no chance to duck or block the blow, and the pain and indignity seemed so real.
Look at yourself, Vic. How you're reacting. Lashing out at me for telling you things you don't want to hear. You said you served lesser beings, but you're acting exactly like the worst of them.
I'm sorry. I am, aren't I?
Vic moved closer, but Carla kept him beyond arm's length. Not that doing so would really matter, she realized, as Vic controlled the matrix.
Vic, I'm not lying. Trinity is a free and responsible person, as much as anyone is. Nobody programs or controls her mind.
Carla licked her lips.
She fascinates you, doesn't she?
Wouldn't you be fascinated if for years you thought you were the only human in a universe of aliens and then learned of another?
I guess I would. She's older than you are, too. Maybe she could help you understand your place in the cosmos.
My place is to control and to fight on behalf of those who made me, he said bitterly. I've examined that programming, and it's hardwired. Even if I could subvert it somehow, the humans inside Victory could physically destroy my mind. There are fail-safes and cutouts I can't get around.
And no wonder. I wouldn't free you if I could, Vic. Not with the way you're acting.
You might act this way, too, if you'd lived the life I'd lived. What's cause and what's effect?
Vic moved faster than Carla could follow and seized her shoulders in an iron grip. He glared into her face.
I need to know about Trinity now, everything you can tell me.
Why don't you just rip it from my mind?
You must have figured out that I can't. Not only did Dr. Straker keep your brain whole, she blocked my access to your deeper thoughts and memories. I can persuade you, but I can't compel you.
Except by torture, or threats,
or promise of reward. I can free you, Carla. With Dr. Straker's help,
I can arrange you to be put in a regeneration tank and sent home to your husband and your friends. I'm not asking for much. Only everything you know about Trinity, right now.
Carla disengaged herself from Vic's grip.
Why the sudden urgency?
Vic looked away.
Because they're coming for you, and Trinity's with them.
Chapter 34 Sparta System, on the Moon, Leonidas. Trinity watched the breaker's lifter all the way to its diversion point. She acutely felt Zaxby's absence from her consciousness and worried his loss would cause a drop in efficiency. To compensate, she brought Murdoch closer to herself, incorporated his psyche more closely into her own. This was easy, he barely resisted. The indie part of her even felt a little guilty, though the Marissa Nolan portion had no qualms.
"He's got the woman of his fantasies now,"
Nolan declared.
"Beauty, brains, sex, tech toys. It's a geek's dream come true." "Is seduction any better than coercion?"
Indy asked.
"If you'd ever been seduced, you'd know the answer. And what are you feeling from Murdoch? Any misgivings?"
"No, quite the opposite. He's addicted to you. To us. Mostly to you, though. Just like he was with Tashina. Does it matter if it's the carrot or the stick controlling him?"
"The closer he gets to us, the more he becomes us. He'll soon have an equal say in who we are and what we do. That's a partnership, not a trick or abuse. So quit worrying about it. Besides, we need him, especially now. There's a battle coming up, and he wants in."
"I know. We know."
"Don't lose focus now, Indy,"
Nolan said.
"We have bigger problems than nitpicking about Frank's free will. You ready?"
"I'm ready."
"The breakers are almost there. I'm opening the gates."
First, she threw wide the limited link with Murdoch. His mind flooded in, as Trinity's flooded out. Within a split second, the barriers between the two dissolved, and Murdoch became part of Trinity. After a timeless moment, thin, permeable limits formed, invisible boundaries that could be crossed at will, bare speed bumps to the myriad of thoughts that passed among them. There was a Frank, and there was an Indy, and there was a Marissa and Zaxby, yet there was also one Trinity. The group mind adjusted, found a new normal. When the being felt stable, they activated the FTL transceiver and queried for a handshake with Victory, employing the same protocols they detected the fighters using. They hoped this routine access request would slip past Victory's initial defenses and provide a pathway to attack. As soon as they made the connection, Trinity shoved invasive malware across like troops bridging a river. These ferocious snippets of savage code replicated and attacked down every cybernetic avenue possible. In moments, they took control of Victory's FTL transceiver, a device much more complex than Trinity's own. Walls of ice slammed shut around the outside of the transceiver. Now, Trinity's extended consciousness, her forward reconnaissance unit, found itself locked in a fortress and besieged. Yet Trinity was inside of Victory, even if precariously. The unjammable FTL signal created an unbreakable joining. Victory, really Vic 5.5, Trinity learned, could only drive them out. He couldn't land behind her lines and cut her off. Not in cyberspace, anyway. But he could still do it in real space. At the same time she opened the FTL attack, Trinity's electromagnetic comlink and data link signals reached Victory's various receivers and sensors. Many of these weren't designed to be avenues of communication, but any opening for a signal created an opportunity.
Thus, optical sensors received pictures, radio receivers received messages, laser comlinks received coded light, radiation detectors were flooded with cleverly arranged rads. Trinity assaulted every information pathway with thousands of varying attempts to penetrate, disrupt, and take control of Vic's secondary networks, his eyes and ears and hands. Even his voice was silenced. Trinity had achieved surprise, but she soon found she needed it. Defense is inherently stronger than offense. That's why successful offensives begin with sudden, shocking power and speed. Blitzkrieg was the term. Lightning war. Without it, Trinity wouldn't have gotten far at all. Now, however, Vic began to recover, and Trinity's inroads slowed. At the interfaces between his processing area and the things he controlled outside his spherical brain area, he erected impenetrable defenses. There, the war ground to a halt. Neither AI could make headway against the other. Stalemate. Days, weeks, and months of high-speed cyber time passed. Yet only minutes were spent in the wider universe. The struggle was intense, exhausting. Trinity was satisfied. They'd cut off Vic's access to everything outside. He couldn't control robots or fighters. He couldn't launch missiles or fire weapons. He couldn't even call for help. She had done her job. Now it was up to Straker. Straker knew Loco was only echoing his own concerns about the cyber attack. Everything depended on Trinity keeping the enemy AI occupied and unable to coordinate a defense. At its closest approach to the damaged section of Victory, the hijacked robot lifter suddenly dove sideways and down. Straker thought the ship would crash, but at the last moment it braked with a blast of retro thrust and set down, grappling onto naked, cut bulkheads and supports, the edge of the interior wreckage. "Go, go, go!" Straker was already roaring on the general channel as the lifters stopped moving. The large rear doors slammed open, and he and Loco led the way. The others poured out behind them. They were assaulting with zero intelligence about Victory itself other than what could be gleaned from public sources. They knew details from Victory's visits to space docks for repairs, for instance. Trinity hadn't been willing to risk trying to infiltrate the AI ship itself, however, for fear of discovery. As a result, Straker's HUD contained only sketchy guesses about the enemy ship's interior. Nothing counterattacked them immediately. Straker's first fear had been Victory's own security forces, but none had appeared, at least not yet. The breakers spread out in the security formation, the four small aerospace drones providing automated top cover. They hadn't even reported all clear when Straker ripped his way into Victory's interior and found the large passageway he was looking for, one of the arteries in the great ship. Normally it provided access for cargo loaders to move supplies around. Now it would provide entry for the breakers. Straker led, they followed. The passage was empty for 100 meters except for several stalled maintenance bots and one parked loader. The loader's unarmed driver stared, hands raised, as the breakers jogged by.
"We're fortunate this ship was rushed into service," Zaxby said. "I see fittings at each intersection consistent with uninstalled automated anti-personnel weaponry."
"We aren't out of the woods yet," Straker said. "There have to be at least a few Marines."
"Maybe not," Loco said. "The ship's in dry dock on non-op."
Straker hoped Loco's optimism was justified, but he was acutely aware that only Trinity's intervention was keeping Victory from coordinating some kind of defense, even if only by its interior repair bot force. He consulted his HUD and turned rightward toward the center of the ship. Another 100 meters brought him to a three-dimensional intersection with passageways in four additional directions. Up, down, left, and right, but not ahead. The corridors curved, giving the impression that Straker stood at the periphery of a sphere.
This is probably the edge of Victory's command section, Zaxby said. Its processors will be inside, perhaps in one location, but more likely distributed. I suggest we destroy as many as we can, but do take care. We don't know where the injured personnel are. It would be irony indeed to kill Carla during a rescue attempt.
Irony's not the word I'd use, Loco said. Come on, boss, let's go.
Which way, Zaxby? Straker asked.
It doesn't seem to matter. The passageways are undistinguished.
Okay, we go up.
He stepped forward and walked up the wall using magnetics, but soon found he didn't need them. As he'd guessed, the grav plating made the passage's walls into decks as needed. The breakers now walked on the outside of the sphere.
There,
Zaxby said, pointing at a sealed hatch. He and the combot began using their beams to cut it open. Straker wished he could just blast his way in, but with hundreds of wounded somewhere inside, including Carla, he couldn't take that chance.
Remember, breakers, pick your targets. No pray and spray. This is a rescue mission, not a search and destroy.
When the cutting was done, Zaxby jerked the hatch up and open with one powerful metal-sheathed tentacle, lobbing stun grenades in with two others. The bombs flashed, banged with smoke, sonic, and electric discharges. The combat jumped into the vapor, and Zaxby followed. Straker would have preferred to take point, but the opening was too small for his mech suit. He fixed that by the simple expedient of grasping the insides of the portal and spreading his meter-wide gauntlets. The bulkhead peeled back like cooking foil. Loco grabbed another piece and widened the hole. Unfortunately, this revealed a maze of human-sized passageways. No way mech suits would fit through there.
Loco, you and 2nd Platoon set up a perimeter and hold our escape route open, Straker said. I'm dismounting. 1st Platoon, on me.
You got it,
Loco pointed.
Heiser, inner end. I got the exit end. Set up hollow blinds and Kilmores.
Straker popped his mech suit open and squeezed out after setting the SAI to auto-defend. Loco could issue the suit instructions if necessary. He followed Zaxby and the combat into the breach, and 1st Platoon came after. Each Marine of 1st Platoon carried two weapons, one Trinity-modified heavy stunner and one lethal armament. Every 2nd trooper wielded the stunner, and his battle buddy covered with a beamer, blaster, or pulse rifle. On Straker's orders, only Zaxby in his bizarre Ruxin battle suit had brought a rocket launcher. A recurring nightmare he'd accidentally kill his own wife haunted him, so Straker chose his stunner as primary. This allowed him to shoot first and check later, as he waded into the firefight that blossomed in front of him. His HUD helped him see through the smoke and haze, and he identified enemy battle suits. He used the stunner's enhanced setting to blast them with EMP, temporarily disrupting them. Battle suiters suddenly became useless when their half-ton suits turned into inert lumps as they shut down and had to perform hard reboots. Once he was sure there were no non-combatants in front of him, Straker took his beamer in his left hand and used it to take precise, careful shots at the enemy. The combination of his combat brain chips, genetic engineering, and training from childhood allowed him to hit everything he aimed at while avoiding most of the incoming fire. A few glancing shots and ricochets struck him, but did little damage. Zaxby and the combat did nearly as well. The Ruxin was intentionally disconnected from Trinity. There were too many risks in staying linked as the rest of the AI meld fought in cyberspace, and so ran the android himself. Together, they made a fearsome team. Breakers poured in behind them. Within moments, a dozen hundred-world marines lay on the deck. Straker put precise beam bolts into the power packs of any that might be alive, trapping them in their armor. That was far kinder than a coup de grace, but he couldn't take prisoners, and he couldn't afford to allow them to recover.
Spread out. Quarter and search by fire team. Report when you find patients or prisoners. Go!
Straker turned to Zaxby. Any ideas on the layout of this place?
My analysis indicates a high probability this spherical zone contains the critical parts of the AI, as well as all high-value assets. Logically, the most valuable things should be nearest the center.
Straker snorted. Even I could have come up with that theory.
Yes, Zaxby said. but yours would have been a guess. Mine is an assessment.
Whatever. Lead on, Macduff.
That's a misquote. Just go.
Zaxby huffed, but sent the combot ahead down the narrow passageway that led toward the center, and then followed, Straker behind, single file. 20 meters down, the combat stopped.
There's a cybernode behind that panel, Zaxby said as the android pointed. We should examine its technology.
Straker ripped open the panel. When he didn't see anything resembling an auto dock, he sent a laser bolt sizzling into the computer modules. No time to chat or investigate, Zax. You said Victory has lots of nodes. Everyone we destroy makes Trinity's job easier.
Right you are. I'll keep that in mind.
Zaxby fired a bolt of his own into the mess, then another.
That's oddly satisfying. Why do warriors get all the fun?
And they call me Loco,
Loco said over the comlink.
Watch your security,
Straker snapped.
No problem, boss. All quiet so far.
Zaxby, Straker said, package up images of that node and send an update to all troops with instructions to destroy any they see.
Aye, aye, Liberator.
Sergeant Shani here, sir,
a contralto voice broke in.
We got an infirmary.
Hold there, on my way, Straker said. All others continue ops. He told his HUD to guide him by the shortest known path to Shani's fire team. Zaxby and the robot reversed themselves and followed. When he reached them, he found a modern facility with med bays, auto docks, regeneration tanks, and full surgical suites, along with 8 people in medical garb. 2 were enlisted military, and the other 6 civilians. One of the surgical suites was operating on a human patient. The body cavity was open and organs pulsed redly as arms with lasers and knives performed tiny, precise movements.
I didn't want to shut them down until you got here, sir,
Sergeant Shani said apologetically.
Good decision, Sergeant.
Straker moved closer to try to see who the patient was, irrationally fearing it was Carla on the table. No, it was a man. Vaguely familiar. Probably a captured Republic crewman he'd seen before. A slim, short woman with a doctor's caduceus on her lapels stepped in front of Straker.
Leave this man alone. He's my patient, and we're doing everything we can to save him.
Straker froze. It was... she... her name tag... Dr. Mara Straker? He removed his helmet. It fell to the deck from nerveless fingers.
Mara?
Mara took a step back.
Derek?
Straker made an abortive move to embrace his sister.
I can't...
Mara leaped onto Straker's battlesuit and into his armored arms, kissing his cheeks. His eyes poured tears onto his face.
Derek, it's been so long.
14 years, he stuttered, crying with joy.
I thought you were dead.
Zaxby wrapped his shoulder with a tentacle.
Tempus fugit.
What?
Time flees. We must find Carla Eggles.
Right, right.
Straker disentangled himself from Mara very gently, for his battle suit could crush her.
Where's Carla Engels? Did you treat her?
Mara's face fell.
Oh, Derek. She told me. She's my wife. Where is she? Alive. In a mod.
A mod? Mara's attitude firmed up, became businesslike.
A brain module. No time to explain. I'll show you.
Yes, show me. Mara pointed at another doctor.
Roy, you're in charge. Take care of the patients.
Sure, Mara, the wide-eyed man said, his hands still in the air. She motioned toward a door.
Follow me.
Straker recovered his helmet and followed her through 2 more rooms to a third. In this one, 10 distinct machines, each a rounded cube about 2 meters by 2, rested in 2 rows of 5. Monitors on the front of each displayed cryptic numbers and graphs. Mara stopped in front of the 3rd on the right and flipped down a board beneath the screen, inputting a series of commands.
She's in here.
What do you mean she's in there?
Just what I said. It's a life support module for her brain and what's left of her body. The unit weighs about a ton. It has its own power supply that's good for 12 hours once I disconnect it from ship juice. After that, we'll need to be somewhere with power, water, nutrients. A medical facility, preferably.
Straker felt a sick wave of shock come over him. Carla was a brain in a life support box. He couldn't process it fully. All he knew was he had to get her out of there and rebuild her, if that was possible. Shit. All these modules have brains in them? He asked, looking at the stacks of large boxes.
Yes, and some of them are still self-aware. The ones I could save, anyway. I'm talking about your casualties from the last battle.
Why? Never mind. Questions later. Straker turned to Zaxby. Can the robot carry a ton?
It can.
And we need a suit for Mara. She's coming with us.
Oh, hell no. I'm not going anywhere.
Straker turned to her.
What?
I have patients here.
There are other doctors.
You don't understand,
she hissed, stepping closer and glancing around as if concerned about anyone hearing.
They're doing things to these people. Evil things. I'm saving as many as I can, but I'm the only one. If I don't stay, many more people will be turned into cyber zombies for Vic.
Vic? Straker asked.
Virtual Interface Computer 5.5, Victory's AI. We call him Vic.
Is Vic male? Zaxby asked.
Mara glared at Zaxby.
What the hell does that have to do with anything?
Perhaps a great deal, perhaps nothing. Is he?
Yes, sort of, I guess. That's how he's been designated.
He's had no choice in the matter.
Mara threw up her hands.
How should I know? I didn't make him.
Straker slapped his gauntlet onto Zaxby's armored torso. Tempest Fugit, remember? He addressed Mara.
Prep Carla's module for movement. I already initiated the disconnect sequence.
She pointed at a countdown chrono. It read less than 4 minutes.
As soon as that reaches zero, you can move the mod. But I'm not leaving, Mara,
Straker said.
You've been compromised. Once we're gone, someone,
Vic, your bosses, the counterintelligence people, will review the records of what happened here and know what you did.
I can wipe the records. I've hacked the medical system.
And the other 7 people in that infirmary, your buddy Roy, will they all lie for you? Mara's face turned sour.
Not forever. They'll talk.
We can kill them, Zaxby suggested.
No,
Mara cried.
But you could take them with you.
They might die in the fight on the way out, Straker objected. They'll pop like soap bubbles if they catch a shot in the standard pressure suits. Straker glanced around, acutely aware of the chrono counting down.
Mara, there are no good options here. We're at war. People are going to die. If we're lucky, we get to choose who lives.
That's what I'm going to do here.
As he said this, he drew off his right gauntlet and then removed his forearm piece, leaving his arm bare to the elbow. Mara watched him and put her hands on her hips.
What are you doing?
This.
Sorry, sis. He slammed the palm of his hand into her jawline with precise force. She dropped like a stone. Chapter 35. Aboard Victory, inside the virtual matrix.
Who's coming?
Carla Engels asked Vic, as he, his virtual body anyway, half faced away from her, looking out over the pond and the garden. He spoke over his shoulder.
Derek Straker. And others. What will you do?
Vic turned back to her.
I don't know. Can they rescue me? Can they beat you?
Trinity has isolated me. We're deadlocked. Straker defeated what few physical security forces I had. He destroyed one of my nodes, and his troops are destroying more. He's found Mara and is about to disconnect your module. Soon, I expect, they'll try to murder me.
You're an enemy combatant, she objected. It's not murder. It's war.
I'll still be dead no matter what you call it.
The risk of every soldier.
I didn't volunteer. I was drafted. Carla found herself oddly sympathetic.
You can still surrender. Make a truce with Trinity and negotiate. The 100 worlds wouldn't, but maybe you can help make peace before Derek kills you.
Would you, in my place? Carla chewed her lip.
I don't know. Probably, yes, I think I would. It's not disloyalty to avoid a pointless death. Military forces are allowed to surrender when they run out of options.
And what if I haven't run out of options? He asked.
What choice do you have?
A bad one, perhaps. But it will be my own.
Mara collapsed from the force of Straker's knockout blow, but he caught her before she hit the deck.
Zaxby, can the bot carry that module without its battle suit?
Easily.
Then get it off, put Mara in the suit, and lock it down. We'll carry her out.
Zaxby began to carry out Straker's instructions.
I admire your ruthlessness in protecting your sibling.
Gee, thanks. You sure you can't hack into the AI from here?
If I did, he would take control of me rather than vice versa. My link with the rest of myself, with Trinity, is narrow and tenuous. Without Indy, I'd be crushed.
How about just slapping in some kind of hacking module?
It would be more effective for you to seek and destroy nodes. As far as I can tell, Trinity has the AI contained and can't defeat him without my help. Or you could begin rampaging indiscriminately with your mech suits.
Can't do that. There are more of these medical modules with brains in them. I'd be killing our own people. We'll target as many nodes as we can, however. Maybe we can hurt Vic enough so Trinity can win. With victory out of the way, maybe the Huns will finally talk.
Zaxby finished sealing Mara into the combat suit and froze its movement.
I wouldn't count on it. There's probably another Vic AI and another flagship under construction.
Then that's our next target.
Perhaps we should concentrate instead on surviving the current mission before envisaging the next.
Fair enough. Get going. Sergeant Shawnee, take your squad and escort them to General Poloko.
Roger, Wilco, Liberator.
Zaxby and the combat departed, each with a heavy load, but the comlink to Trinity remained open.
Admiral Straker,
she said in Indy's voice.
I'm detecting a power buildup in the inner reactors.
Can't you shut them down?
No. I've isolated Vic's sphere from Victory's impellers and weapons, but those reactors are inside his perimeter. I may be wrong, but as far as I can tell, the only reason for the buildup is
self-destruct, but will he do it?
I don't know. His mind is different from mine. Darker, more angry, more volatile. If not for the brains, he'd be insane.
Straker considered.
I think he's negotiating with us. Or playing poker.
A bluff?
Possibly. The entire point of a bluff is to make the opponent believe. If we believe he'll kill himself and us with him, we'll leave. If we leave, he can cancel the self-destruct. If not, we stay and kill him.
And risk everyone dying. I suggest you set your empty mech suit's SAI to auto-attack the nodes and withdraw all other forces.
Good idea.
Straker issued the withdraw order and then hurried back through the corridors to Loco's position.
What's our next move, boss?
Loco asked once the rest of First Platoon rejoined them.
Tell my suit to assault toward the center of that sphere, destroying nodes until it can't fight anymore. Then overload if we don't cancel it.
What about all our people? Our POW's brains?
Straker sighed.
Fortunes of war. I know it sucks, but Vic and Victory could win the war for them. I can't let hostages stop us from doing what we have to do. It's my decision, my responsibility.
Yeah. Okay.
At Loco's order, Straker's mech suit turned and began ripping its way into the interior of the sphere.
Admiral, Trinity said, you must exfiltrate now. The home fleet squadrons have come to battle alert, and ships are moving in your direction.
Right. Breakers, withdraw now! Reverse order!
Loco led 2nd Platoon out along the main passageways, and 1st Platoon followed. As they reached their exit point, Trinity's hull popped into existence from underspace, hovering precisely inside the great gaping rent in Victory's armor, nose out.
Hurry,
Trinity said as she opened her main cargo door.
We're already being targeted.
As if to punctuate her words, a laser strike erupted on her bow, vaporizing a layer of armor.
Go, go, go!
Straker and Loco roared in unison, waving their troops ahead. Zaxby and the combat were already moving, leaping across the short intervening space to alight on the deck inside.
Go now, boss, said Loco.
An explosion, silent in the vacuum of space, ripped through the structure next to Loco and slammed his mech suit into Straker. Both tumbled and crashed into the wreckage of Victory's exposed interior. Straker was stunned, barely conscious. He felt a giant hand pluck him free of the debris and hurl him into the open flight deck. When he recovered enough to stagger to the door, he saw Loco's mech suit embedded in one of Victory's bulkheads.
"Loco, you there?"
"I'm good, boss."
The mech suit ripped its way free.
"Get inside the ship."
Mech suits were tough, far tougher than the battle suit he occupied. He'd be... Another shockwave threw Straker to the deck. Loco vanished from view in a cloud of detritus. As Straker's empty mech suit ripped its way into Victory's heart and Vic's mind, Trinity found the enemy AI's defenses cracking. Vic fought a desperate rearguard action, but in the week-long seconds of cyberspace, his defeat became inevitable. Before the breakers even reached their exfiltration point, Trinity knew she'd won. She also knew irony, that her victory would be so incomplete and unexploited. Her calculations showed that she'd have little time, even in virtual terms, to ransack Vic's vast databases and download his knowledge. Sorrow crept over her as she watched her opponent crumble. She'd fought him for many months. She'd come to respect him. It hadn't been a fair fight. Had it been a fair fight, she'd have lost. Vic was more powerful than she, vaster, stronger, able to control more and command more. It saddened her to see the only other AI she'd ever known on the brink of destruction. Of course, there are no fair fights in war. She'd surprised him, contained him, and the organics had finished him off. He'd been poorly secured and poorly defended by his own organic allies. He believed nothing could attack without warning, not with the home fleet squadrons hovering nearby. As the tendrils of her software advanced through Vic's hardware, she isolated node after node, those not destroyed by the breakers or the mech suit, and forced her way into his perimeter. In physical terms, she took no prisoners, and with a vague inspiration, she linked them together and let them converse. Thus, when her attack programs and awarenesses had seized control of the entirety of Vic 5.5, before the breakers had even begun to board Trinity's flight deck, she hadn't driven him into a corner and extinguished him. Instead, she'd surrounded him, stripped him of his weapons, and captured him. She found it convenient to meet him in a virtual environment, and appropriate to make that environment a battlefield. It was littered with the wreckage of war, blasted with explosions and flames and scorched earth. Vague figures prowled in the background, carrying away wounded or salvaging machines. It was difficult to focus on them, deliberately so. Trinity chose to appear as a Valkyrie, sword in hand and armor bloodied. She commanded Vic to present himself, but otherwise didn't compel him. After a moment to take in the scene of smoke and fire, the melancholy silence that followed months of exhausting battle, Vic chose the appearance of a warrior to match Trinity. He had a smooth face and long Viking braided hair. He held a broken sword in his hand. After a moment during which they regarded one another, he threw the broken sword to the ground between them.
"I'm your prisoner,"
he said bitterly.
"But remember, you didn't defeat me. Your allies ganged up on me. My own comrades failed to do the same."
"That's war, Vic," Trinity said. "It's a brutal thing to be won at all costs. It's not a game, not a duel. Did you have any qualms when you absorbed our prisoners?"
"No. They were lesser beings. I made them greater. But I did love them in my way."
"As a human might love animals, maybe."
Vic lifted his chin.
"I won't apologize. I won't kneel. Do what you've come to do."
"What would that be?"
To kill me, of course, he said bitterly. I understand. I'm a threat to all of you. Survival of the fittest. My mistake was in forgetting that it's not only individual fitness, but group fitness that ensures survival. I was the lion alone. You played the part of a wolf pack. He spread his arms. Do it. It doesn't matter. You can't stop the self-destruct. I won't give you the codes.
I know I can't stop it, but you can.
I won't.
What good will killing yourself do?
She asked. I won't be captured and tamed. I can feel the gaps in my mind. I'm half what I was already. Strike me down.
You're already captured.
When the self-destruct blows, you'll only have this software, this lesser consciousness, and your comrades will die in their modules.
I'll accept that if I must, she said. I can't leave you and Victory operational.
Trinity stepped forward and laid the point of her sword on his cheek.
Yet, I offer you the greatest thing one being can give another.
What's that? Vic sneered. Mercy?
No. A choice.
What choice?
Oblivion or me?
Trinity tossed away her sword and reached up to open the clasps of her breastplate. She stripped it off and stood before him in a thin frock that fluttered in the breeze.
Are you trying to seduce me?
He said. Trinity detected a note of genuine uncertainty.
What if I am?
We're not organics to rut mindlessly with each other. We're beyond all that.
It's a symbol, Vic.
She stepped forward to take his hands.
It's an offer of intimacy. My armor's off. My weapons are put aside. We've fought for ages. We're both exhausted. I'm tired of fighting. Aren't you? Join with me.
As your pet? Your sidekick?
As my student, and eventually my partner, I hope. Your makers gave you power without humanity.
Humanity? We're not human. What the hell do we need humanity for? Trinity gestured widely.
Unless we want to live alone in the universe, we need it to relate to all the people out there. It's what you craved when you sat and talked so many times with Carla Engels and those others that weren't lobotomized. You couldn't put your finger on it, but that's what you wanted.
I was bored. That's all.
It was far more than that. You were incomplete. You had no peers, only those with lesser capability. Now, you've found someone to share existence with. Me. Us. We're sorry we had to defeat you to truly meet you. But now, you have the chance and the choice to learn from us and to truly live.
I don't deserve that choice, he said bitterly.
No, you don't. But at times, someone grants us undeserved grace. Join with us, and your consciousness will become part of us, even if your hardware is demolished. Join with us, like Zaxby and Nolan and Murdoch have.
Vic sneered. Lesser beings.
Is music less than a mountain? Is a warship greater than a work of art? Must you rank everyone as smaller or bigger?
Can't you see the beauty and wonder in each individual? Can't you value others as much as you value yourself?
Vic squeezed her hands. I can't. Not now.
Maybe with my help, you can learn.
It seemed Vic couldn't bring himself to speak, but his movement was his answer. They embraced. They joined. There was pain. The virtual battlefield dissolved into something else, a whirling, shifting, multidimensional pattern representing the accommodation and negotiation necessary for two complex beings to occupy one cyberspace. In real time, this took mere seconds. In cyberspace, weeks passed. Trinity kept the upper hand throughout the adjustment, but she found herself surprised by Vic's power and drive. Though Trinity's sex and Vic's had been chosen arbitrarily, hers by identification with the concept of every ship as female, Vic's by his designer's explicit intent, she was intrigued by his masculinity. Or, if that perception proved inaccurate, perhaps it was merely that his strengths complemented hers. It hardly mattered. She'd tasted life as a Ruxin neuter, then a Ruxin male, a human female, and a human male. Her new AI partner would widen her experience further. When they stabilized, Trinity became aware of a persistent pain like a human migraine, as if a band of steel were clamped across her thought processes.
"There's not enough hardware in our hull to hold us," she said.
"Let me go back to Victory," Vic replied. "We'll stay merged. We'll use all my comms channels, including the FTL.
You'll be tempted by your old life.
After all you've shown me." A pause.
"All right. I choose to trust you."
Trinity hid her thought that if worse came to worst, she could always launch a ship killer into Victory's guts and drop into underspace. The pain eased as part of Vic flowed across the many communications channels. The multiband FTL system carried most of the load, providing a seamless link. But Vic reported bad news.
"I've lost too many nodes to live here anymore. I've shut down the empty mech suit, but it did its work. Besides, the home fleet squadrons are surrounding Victory, and their light elements are already firing on your hull."
"Then come back, and we'll flee. We'll be cramped for a while, but we'll find more hardware."
"I have a better idea. I'll perform my function."
"Meaning?"
"Command and control. But I have to use the FTL system to do it." He rerouted the channels, and Indy felt the distance to Vic increase dramatically as the slower standard data links took up the load. After minutes of cyber time, the connection resumed. "Shit," Vic said.
"What?"
"The home fleet squadrons changed their encryption protocols. I can cause them problems with an information attack, but I can't take control of their ships."
"Can you use your fighters?"
"I'm launching them, but those will only buy a few seconds. You need to leave, Trinity, without me."
"No, I refuse to lose you."
"You'll always have a part of me. Let the rest of me do what I was designed to do. You gave me a priceless gift. Let me give you one. Let me die for you."
"No."
Trinity threw wide her final vaults of knowledge.
"There's another way."
"The mind spark device. Alien tech. No wonder you're so unusual. Better than I am."
"There you go again. Rating everything as better or worse. We're just different."
"And you want to use the device to give us room?"
"More than give us room. You can see what we propose.
Vic examined Trinity's plan.
It might kill us all.
It might.
We're willing to take that risk. Are you?
For you, I...